Figure out who your audience is, figure out what it costs to acquire a new customer, and figure out what they're going to pay you over their lifetime value. And when you have those numbers, you can go scale a business really fast, or figure out your numbers are upside down and you got to figure out something operationally to make those numbers make sense, or you're just out of business.
CEOs often feel stuck in the grind of scaling their business and feel like they're missing out on the best parts of life, like family, friends, or travel. On this podcast, CEOs come to take themselves and their companies to the next level. Let's dive into the Millionaire Mind with your host, Dallin Schultz.
Hey, welcome back to another Millionaire Mind episode where I have some of the most successful business owners sharing what motivates them to get out of bed every morning and how they elevate themselves and their companies to the next level. And on today's episode, we are going to be talking about, I would argue to say, probably one of the most important things around business, and that's your marketing abilities and how you appear to those that you're trying to serve and to help. And so our guest today has loads of experience in this industry. So really excited to get into his story, his journey, and maybe he'll even share a few little nuggets for us on things that we can do to help around our marketing presence. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome our guest today, Dallas McLaughlin. Dallas, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So Dallas, why don't you take a couple minutes and just share with our listener a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, for sure. So like you said, my name is Dallas McLaughlin. I own the aptly named business, Dallas McLaughlin Digital Marketing. And what I do is I offer direct-to-expert advertising services across all media channels. I really focus on digital advertising. So that's going to be your streaming platforms, your programmatic display advertising, your paid search, your paid social. Again, we run across the whole funnel, but I really try to focus my attention and kind of my abilities on that lead generation aspect. So driving actual dollar bills into the proverbial cash register, getting you those leads that convert. That's really what I focus on and differentiate around.
Because you've been in this for quite some time now, correct?
Yeah, honestly, I was thinking about this the other day. I launched my first paid search ad when I would have been 15 years old in 2001.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's probably changed like crazy over the years.
Yeah.
Testing strategy and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot more to it now. Back then, like I said, penny clicks, like no one else was advertising. So if you were in a local market, you were the first one to place ads, you got all the clicks. So it's a little bit different in that regard.
Sure. Sure. Awesome. Well, let's take it back and talk about when this journey really began for you. And would you say it started at 15 when you launched that first paid ad, or did it start sooner than that?
So it started just a little bit before that. I actually was on summer break when I was like 14, I don't know, maybe between eighth and ninth grade. And I found a book about HTML, website coding. Like back then it was just like in Notepad. And to me, when I found that book, that just unlocked something for me. To me, the idea that you can build whatever you can think of and you can put it on this relatively new thing called the internet. Again, this is like 1999, 2000, and people can go access it and look at it and judge it. And back then it was like chat rooms and things. So to me, when I figured out that was a possibility, that just like blew my mind. And I just went down a rabbit hole of building websites, which then no one ever went to was the problem. I was like, I'm building these things and literally I'm getting zero visitors. So then I was like, oh, I can just pay $10 and have a search ad and people will show up. So it was a natural progression into, I have this thing, how do I get people there? And that's what led me into advertising.
It's fascinating listening to other people's stories, because like this aha moment that it seemed like you had around code was how I was with real estate investing. Like something just clicks and you're like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I got to find out as much as I can about this area. And getting into code and stuff, especially at such a young age, like with it being so new, that doesn't seem typical to me. So would you have always considered yourself a computer person, or was this something you just stumbled across?
So I had a computer for the sake of like playing computer video games. That was about the extent of it.
The Oregon Trail.
Yeah, like all that stuff. I think my parents just got it. So like I had something to do. We lived like outside of the city in a kind of a smaller town. So I needed something to do. And that's why we had it. When I saw the code, for me, that was cool. And I don't think it was as daunting to get into back then as it is now. It was really archaic back then. It was literally just a few lines. It was the one language of HTML. It wasn't software development. I never went down that path. It was just literally websites. So it was a really simple foundational building blocks that got me into it. And then as new tools and technologies came out, I naturally had an advantage because I've kind of been in this world now for a while, and it's just easy to adopt the later technologies, which were much more complex.
We've had a lot of people on the show that where they are today is not at all where they thought they would be had you talked to them 10, 15, 20 years ago. It sounds to me like from the get-go, you're like, yep, digital marketing. Like that just kind of seems to be where you knew you wanted to be. Is that a fair assumption?
It is and it isn't. It took me a windy road to make that connection. For me, I was building these websites, doing this advertising. I was getting paid from like family, friends, and really small local businesses to do this for them. But nowhere it connected the dots in my head of this is a potential career. To me, it just seemed like this kind of like side hobby, and then I'll figure out what I'm going to do. And I think where it made sense is I actually went to college and got a music degree. And the way that I was paying my way through college at the time, obviously help from my parents, thanks mom and dad, but I was going to all of my professors who also owned their own businesses, their own recording studios, like guitar shops, things like that. I just needed to make a dollar. So I was going like door to door saying, hey, I'll build you a website. I'll run some ads. I'll get you actual customers. Like I understand the music business because here we all are. And I did that. And then I had so many clients that were actually my professors, the music people. And one of them actually came to me and he was like, the world has a lot of musicians. We have a lot of people in the music industry, but nobody in this building can do what you're doing for all of us. My actual advice is to leave and go do that. So that was where I was like, oh, maybe I can go do it. Maybe this can be a real job. And then that's when the momentum started building.
It sounds like having that outside perspective of somebody that's doing what you probably envision yourself doing down the road, say, whoa, hey, hold on, just so you know, we think you're onto something here. It's interesting how oftentimes, in fact, I had a conversation this morning with someone on the podcast that hired a business coach, and that business coach was able to see what they couldn't, because them as a business owner, they were just head down, face down in the business, grinding, trying to make it work. And they needed that outside perspective to shed some light and to provide some clarity. And then they were able to make pivots and adjustments from there. And it sounds like you experienced a similar situation with this professor of yours.
Yeah, it's exactly, again, what you just described. It was a guy that I looked up to and admired, and probably at that time would have been like, I'd love to have his career path, his job. He'd won Grammy Awards, all these things. And basically, he's like, don't do it. You know, he's like, you've got it. And now in hindsight, I'm thinking like, was I just that bad at the music industry that he was like, get out of here? Or did I truly have a gift? But either way, he pointed me in that direction. And here I am.
So did you finish out school, or did you decide just to move on to this digital marketing thing, or change? Like, what was your pivot there?
So the way I did it is I completed the associate's degree, but didn't go on and ever complete a bachelor degree. Again, there wasn't a digital marketing program. They're like, it was really undefined. So I just knew I could always go do that if I want to. I could always go get a bachelor's in whatever and on down that path. Or I can just go to work. I can do this job. I can master this craft. And what comes of that is what comes of that. And now all these years later, what are we, probably 18 years later, I wouldn't have done it any different now looking back.
Wow. So making big life pivots like that can be really hard. You're in career, you're in college, some people might be in a career and they have this impression, they have this thought, they have this feeling to pivot. And I know for me personally, there's a lot of internal struggle around making decisions like that, because you don't want to feel like a failure. You don't want people to think you're giving up or got too hard. Just there's a lot of interesting feelings and emotions and things that happen when people reach these pivotal moments. What helped you make that decision to ultimately, hey, I'm pivoting and I'm going all in?
I think for me, I assess risk and decision making in maybe a different way, maybe because I didn't know any other way. Really, for me, pretty much every decision boils down to that's either a one-way decision, that's like a one-way street that you're on, you make that decision and there's no turning around, or it's a two-way street. You make that decision, it doesn't work out, you can turn around. And if you figure out which path you're on, I would recommend making as many two-way decisions as you can, make them fast, figure it out. If you identify that as this is a decision I can only make once and things are going to change forever from here, then think a lot more about that. for me, I guess, essentially dropping out of college to start going down this digital marketing path, that was a two-way street. That wasn't risky to me at all. I didn't ever think that could be the wrong decision. Every decision to me, especially back then, was a very temporary decision. I could always just go walk back into the admissions office and sign back up if it didn't work out. And I still kind of do a lot of that kind of frameworking around decision-making today, where it's like, where a lot of people are thinking, well, what if I quit my job and start my business? It's not that risky, because you can always, if you're a talented, well-known professional, you can always go get a job. Like, if, you can always go probably right back to the job you have today. But for some reason, that's like really, and again, maybe I'm missing a piece of my brain or something, that risk piece of it. But
all business owners are. We're all missing a piece. There's no other reason we'd put up with all the abuse that we go through as business owners, oftentimes self-inflicted. I was going to ask a question and you kind of answered it right there. I was going to ask, like, how often do you think people are faced with a two-way decision, but they interpret it as a one-way?
I think really often. I think pretty much all the time. I guess we're dubbing that as a two-way street decision. I think they cloud that with a lot of pride and ego. And if I make this decision, I can't turn around because of what people might think or what they might say, or people are gonna see it as a failure, which turns it into a one-way decision when it's not actually. I mean, there's been so many things I've done that didn't work. And what I always say to this day is most people actually don't care. Like, it doesn't matter.
It's incredible how much we subconsciously live our lives at the expense and because of expectations of other people. Mm-hmm. And I remember going through this exercise in a training where they kind of walk you through mentally some visual, like, meditation, kind of like freeing, releasing expectations of other people. And then they pose a question, like, what would you do if there was no expectations from anyone and this was your decision? And when you can get down to that point, it's incredible the clarity that you get as an individual. But I think we project a lot of what people might say, what they might think. And so we use that to cloud our judgment, to your point, and overcomplicate the decisions. And maybe it's because our whole lives, one of our parents said to go after this, and we decide not to. Now we feel like we're letting them down. Mm-hmm. So there's this quote I heard a couple of years back, absolutely love it, related to this. And they said, the greatest weight you will ever lose is the weight of other people's opinions of you.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that fully.
And if you can just learn to be, to let go and do what's right for you, for your family, your immediate circle, I think life would be a lot less complicated and a lot less crazy. And I think we would get onto our path that we're meant to be on much, much sooner.
Yeah. And I would go even, I'd say more on that too. So people that have worked with me in the past, back when I was, you know, a full-time employee at all these different places, I think it can come across as this person doesn't care what we think. And this is a lesson I try to give my kids too, who are very young. It's not that I don't care. I do care. I care incredibly, a very large amount about everything that I do, but I have to have a filter of whose actual feedback and opinions should I sit with and think about and make a real decision. Do I take their advice and feedback? Or is it somebody in this other group of people that it's like their feedback and opinion really doesn't matter? I'm sorry if they don't like it or do like it. Maybe they love it. Either way, it might not matter. So again, I kind of run it through that filter. Is this a person who I respect, admire, who has my best interests in mind when they're giving me advice? Yeah. Or is this just somebody who's saying things to say things to fill the space in the room? And you see that a lot.
Especially if there's a big decision that you're considering, that you're looking to make, find that person you look up to, that mentor, that is where you think you want to be, and get their thoughts, get their feedback. And you'll find that a lot of the times, a lot of the areas you get that negative feedback is from people that have never been where you want to go. And they often project a lot of their own insecurities and fears onto you. Or maybe subconsciously, they don't want to admit that you actually might crush it at that thing. People are interesting. They're funny, funny beings.
Yeah. Yeah. I think on that last piece, the last thing I'll say, and I think a lot of people think success is like a zero sum game. Like if they watch somebody get successful, that they think there's less success available for them, where it's like, no, actually I can be successful and you can be successful. So let's both go be successful. It's just this weird thing a lot of people have.
And the right businesses, the right partnerships I've been around, often create success with that person. Mm-hmm. Like, you can be successful, I can be successful, we can be even more successful if we work together and collaborate. Yeah. And so having that abundant mindset, I think, is critical, especially as an entrepreneur and a business owner. Mm-hmm. So let's fast forward a little bit. So you were in college, decided to get into digital marketing. Did you coast there, ride there for a few years? At like what point did your journey, was there another large pivot, if you will?
Yeah, it wasn't a straight and narrow path, that's for sure. So I was growing up in a small town in southern Minnesota. I went to school in Minneapolis, Minnesota, but I moved back home once I left college. Same program I was running up in Minneapolis with my professors. I was finding small businesses to go run either their paid search campaigns. Early this time, social media was coming out, so you could do organic stuff. Paid social wasn't around yet. I still had to have regular old jobs. I still had to work at hotels and wherever else, restaurants, but I was still always doing this thing. I think 2008 was the first time the idea of a marketing agency entered my mind. There was a small business in my hometown, and I just went in there one day, and I remember asking them, this was, 2008, when Facebook ads had just recently come out. I remember I just asked the receptionist lady, which is so funny in hindsight, I was like, does anybody here do Facebook ads for your clients? And they were like, no, we don't know what you're talking about. And I was like, well, can I talk to somebody who might? And I remember I talked to the owner of the company. I got a job. I walked them through Facebook ads, how you could use them, all these things, how they could sell them to their current clients. That was my first advertising job. And from there, the biggest pivot, which is what you asked for, is I got to a point where in that town, there weren't any other opportunities. I couldn't go bigger and further. And I still honestly didn't know what that looked like. But I remember I had some family in Phoenix, Arizona, which is where I live now. And I was thinking, like, I visited here. I was like, that's a big city. It's as big as I can think of right now in this small town. And I was like, I bet there's agencies there. I just did some Googling around. I was like, there's a ton of agencies. So that was the next big move. Just literally in 28 days, I'm coming across as a rash decision maker. But it was in 28 days, I sold everything I owned, moved across the country to Phoenix, and then just got after it.
But here's the thing. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what I would consider a two-way decision. Because worst case scenario, you move back, right?
What's funny is I remember I was having a conversation with a guy who owned a business in my hometown, and he said that. He said, good luck. Hopefully we don't see you back here, but maybe we do. Maybe you come back home. I was like, maybe. I don't know. Haven't ever gone back since.
Now, I think that just people need to understand that most decisions in life, it's a two-way street. Like, ask yourself, what's the worst that could happen? Mm-hmm. And if you're like, oh, well, I just go back to this or that, then go for it. Because there's going to be people you meet. There's going to be things you learn. There's going to be mistakes you make. But there's going to be a lot of value in just making a decision and just growing and getting out of your comfort zone. And you said this was back in, when was this, like 2009, 2010?
I worked around my hometown for probably 4 or 5 years. I think I came to Phoenix in 2013. So it was a little bit longer.
Okay.
So about 5 years I was working around agencies up there.
Okay. So, I mean, you've been here over 10 years now.
Yeah.
And I don't know, did you have snow where you grew up?
A ton of snow. Yeah.
Yeah. I grew up in upstate New York. People are like, why'd you move to Phoenix? Like, it's so hot. Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't have to shovel sunshine.
Yeah.
Like, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. It's insane.
So awesome. Actually, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to start talking about your pivot into your own business and making that decision. And so we'll be back in a few short moments.
Hey, Dallin Schultz here with Rev Equity Group. We just launched an exciting new investment opportunity for those looking to diversify their investments across 1,000+ apartment units in some of the hottest markets in the country. If you are fed up with banks and the stock market and want to invest in hard assets to more effectively grow and preserve your wealth, then click on the link in the show notes for more info or go to investwithrev.com and schedule a short 15-minute intro call so we can determine if our investment strategy is aligned with your goals. It's time to take your financial future into your own hands. Take action, schedule a call, and find out how my team can serve you. At Rev, we make apartment investing easy.
All right, Dallas. So you shared with us your journey getting into digital marketing, kind of how that began, your move out here to Phoenix, starting working for different agencies. Let's fast forward a little bit and start talking about what was going through your mind when you decided to branch off and do your own thing and really become your own boss.
Yeah, for sure. So again, kind of like some of what we've already talked about now, it wasn't an overnight thing. I have had a website, DallasMcLaughlin.com, exactly what it is today. I've had that website since probably also 2013, 2014. I've always had that brand presence. I've always had the ability to go online and hire me for whatever is the thing at the time. As I was working with all of these agencies, I was building my own network, my own connections, kind of putting myself out there. And when I was working with these agencies, I was fully in on all of them. I didn't know at that time I'd have a career as my own business owner. I was just trying to grow my own career as far and as fast as I could. And then what happened was kind of this COVID-19 thing. So I was working at an agency. I was director of performance marketing. I had 16 people underneath me. Performance marketing, as that agency referred to it, was going to be your search engine optimization, your paid media, your content marketing, email marketing, all that stuff. So I had 16 direct reports, a team that I had assembled that was awesome. And we had clients like American Express and AAA Farmers Insurance, some big guys, and they weren't really impacted by the pandemic like a lot of the smaller businesses were. They're big enough where they could weather that storm. But what I was seeing is I was seeing a lot of friends that worked at smaller agencies or local business owners I knew either have to fire their agency, or the agency friends of mine were telling me that they were getting fired or paused, whatever you want to call it at the time. And I remember thinking, in the past, the thing that has kind of stopped me from starting my own business was kind of this question around, well, where are my clients going to come from? Am I going to be able to go get new business? And the way the world was prior to 2019, 2020, was for an agency to get a new client, an agency had to lose a client. That's your zero-sum game. And I saw this as, wow, a once-in-a-lifetime event where all of these clients today are firing all of their agencies. All of these great clients all of a sudden have no advertising representation. This is never going to happen again. And I was like, they all got to come back and advertise. The stakes are going to be higher. They're going to watch that expense line. They're not going to want to go hire the big expensive advertising agency. I was like, if I'm ever going to do this, this is actually the chance to go do it. And I went to Hawaii for 2 weeks, took a little vacation, kind of knew that there would still need to be a bigger kind of lightning strike launch to the business than just quitting my job. So kind of thought through some stuff while I was over there. Came back here, put in my notice, and 2 weeks later, on March 22nd of 2020, I officially launched my business. That was me.
One thing I want to touch on is the opportunity you recognize. And I think that's one of the skill sets that business owners and entrepreneurs have. And you had developed a skill set for over years now, and recognizing the opportunity that there's going to be a shift in the market, and that is going to open the door. Because of the experience that you had up to that point enabled you to really be able to capitalize on that. But it's scary. I've left the W-2 world to go into self-employment. What was that transition really like for you? Was there like, oh shit, what am I doing type of moments? Or were you pretty confident and just knew that regardless of what happens, it was going to work out?
No, I wasn't scared at all. I knew it was going to work. So again, when that opportunity came up, I was prepared. I'd spent years outside of agency land, building my brand, building my reputation. I had the website. I had the media campaigns prepared. I had all this stuff in place. It wasn't like all of a sudden an opportunity showed up and I wasn't ready to take advantage of it. I always started thinking towards that timeline in my career, there's going to be a day where I probably want to go do this. And then it was realizing this is the time to go do it. So for me, it was a really fast ramp up from when that business launched to when I was far exceeding whatever salary I was making at my last agency. There was things you learn along the way. Honestly, a good problem to have is there was a lot of growth right away. And then you kind of had to rewind a little bit and build that foundation and the process and, you know, your standard operating procedures and all that. I would much rather have it that way than spending all day building that stuff and nothing else to do.
So what would you say was one of the biggest challenges that you experienced when you decided to go off on your own?
I think the biggest kind of mindset shift I had to explain to people, and a lot of it is around category creation, and I might be huffing my own fumes on this one, but the way I also kind of mapped out the world at that time was if you were a business owner and you needed marketing support, you could hire a freelancer, which at that time I kind of scribbled out on a notepad, a freelancer, somebody who will work for cheap, they will take orders and they will do those things for you. Great. A lot of people need those. You could in-house your full media team, which is expensive because now you got to hire a Google person, you got to hire a Facebook person, you got to hire a display person, all these different things, very expensive. I think every brand should aspire to get there someday, but it's expensive. You could go hire a full service advertising agency. But if you only need advertising, the efficiencies of hiring an agency is if you're using a lot of services, if you're getting your graphics, your video, your website, your SEO, your paid media. But there was this gap that I kind of saw, which was there are businesses, good businesses, that need somebody who is a high-powered veteran of the ad industry that can take my program and run with it. That's not the full service agency. That's not the freelancer down at the bottom of that totem pole that gives us what we need. So talking to people and saying, hey, there's kind of this view that I have. Don't call me a freelancer. I had to like battle that. I said, don't call me an agency because I'm not going to try to do all this other stuff for you. I'm going to do my thing and I'm going to give you the performance and the results that you've always wanted. And if it's not there, I'm not giving you any contracts or anything. You can call me tomorrow and pause everything and go hire your agency. So again, maybe that's creating a two-way decision for the clients. They can always go back to the agency if I don't work out, make it easy for them to say yes to me. But just having the conversation around, I'm this other thing. So not only are you going to treat me like that client, I'm going to give you that level of service. And that made all the difference. But it's still a conversation I have today.
Wow. So share with our listener and myself a little bit, if you're open to it, what are a couple nuggets or things that you would recommend for people that are trying to market their business?
So the biggest thing that I see businesses struggle with today, and these are huge businesses all the way down to the mom and pop shops. Honestly, some of those smaller shops have it more figured out than the big guys. It might be simpler at that level, is figuring out what is your customer acquisition cost, first of all. Meaning if I have to go sell a new product tomorrow to a new customer that's never heard of me today, in advertising spend, what does that cost me to acquire that new customer? And on one hand, that better be less than what you're actually going to make off of that person in that initial transaction. So customer acquisition cost, identifying that immediately. And then lifetime value of a customer. Because what a lot of companies will have to figure out is, okay, well, maybe I can overspend on the acquisition side because I know that that customer is going to be with me either three or four more purchases, or they're going to sign up for a subscription, which on average is 28 months, let's say. So you can overspend on an acquisition cost if you understand your customer lifetime value. And then just lastly, who's your audience? I think I ask people, I'm working with a client right now, 80 plus locations across four different states. I don't want to totally out them, but I ask them who their customer, their target demographic is. And they say, anyone with a car. And it's like, well, no, that cannot be your answer to who is your customer. Your
too general.
Demographic. Yeah. So figure out who your audience is, figure out what it costs to acquire a new customer, and figure out what they're going to pay you over their lifetime value. And when you have those numbers, you can go scale a business really fast, or figure out your numbers are upside down and you got to figure out something operationally to make those numbers make sense, or you're just out of business.
So if there's a business owner that hasn't determined this yet, they haven't determined their customer acquisition cost or the lifetime value of that customer, what should they start doing today to be able to figure that out?
Acquisition costs should be pretty simple. So if you're already running ads, you need to, I guess if you go back even further, have your conversion tracking set up to know who's converting off your ads. But what are you spending and how many people has that converted into customers? Then all you do is take your customers, divide it by your spend, and that's your acquisition cost. If you want to look at lifetime value, so me, for example, I'm not going to give you that number, but all I would do is look at, okay, the client started on this date. I invoiced them every month for this many months, on average, this amount of money. So their lifetime value was this amount of money when they ended. So technically, I could know I could spend a large amount to acquire a customer because I know I'm going to make that money back because on average, a customer will stay with me long enough. I actually have all these calculators on my website that do a lot of this. I actually built them for myself. And then people were like, hey, can I get that? And I made them look a little fancier. But yeah, figuring out all that stuff, cost to advertise, cost to acquire, click-through rates, cost per clicks, CPMs, all that stuff. You got to know the numbers.
What's your website? You brought it up, so we might as well share it right now.
Yeah, it's just my first name, lastname.com, DallasMcLaughlin.com. It's hard to spell, so you'll have to look in the show notes. But
excellent. So go ahead, check that out. If you're trying to figure out what your customer acquisition cost is or the lifetime value, super cool tool. And I'm sure that's been a great lead generator for you as well. Just getting help and get people in.
It is. Yeah. It's not gated or anything. Like, you don't have to put an email address. I lean on the numbers a lot because that's my advantage as a business owner. I've worked inside of too many agencies and I've taken business from too many agencies that will shy away from measurability and trackability because they're scared of what that number might actually be. It might actually show they're not very good. So for me, having the confidence in the performance of what I do, I want to pull up all those numbers. I want to show you all those numbers. And I want to ask the competition to show their numbers. Show me yours, I'll show you mine. And that's why I build all these tools. A lot of clients want to believe in their performance versus have the truth behind the performance. So a lot of times clients will maybe have a belief that things aren't working and I can show them, no, that here's the truth of what's working. And that helps kind of reframe a lot of those conversations.
And on the flip side, they might believe that it's working until they look at the numbers and say, hey, we got to pivot. And listen, numbers don't lie. So when it comes to business, it's if there's something you can measure, a metric that you can assign a number to measure it, that's going to help you to grow and to scale. So, well, Dallas, what's coming up for you? Any big, exciting goals, changes, and any more crazy pivots or big pivots? Or what's coming up for Dallas McLaughlin?
Man, that's a good question. I'll know it when I see it. I'll say that. I mean, right now, it's just been coming up on 3 full years of the business, entering the 4th year. You kind of have this belief that it's going to slow down and you'll have time to kind of reset and think about things. And it just hasn't. So I've just been heads down on the projects I have, showing the work that I got to show. And I'm really very self-motivated to go as deep and as I can on my craft. And that keeps me very busy.
Awesome. Well, we're wrapping up on time here. And one thing I like to do at the end of every show with all of our guests is to go through these 4 questions. And the first one being is, what is one absolute book recommendation for those looking to scale and further develop their millionaire mind?
The book that I have read twice and listened to on audiobook several times, I've sent it to my dad, I've sent it to my brother, and I've told everybody to read it. It's called The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. It's not The Art of War, it's The War of Art. It's a play on that one. And that book is the book that you need if you're ever just feeling unmotivated, if you're ever feeling like, can I do this? Can't I do this? The whole premise of the book is that there is this life that you want to live, and there's this life that you're living. And between those two things is what's called the resistance. That's what Stephen Pressfield calls it. And he walks you through all of these examples of what the resistance is, how to spot it, how to approach it, how to deal with it, how to overcome it. And spoiler alert, it pretty much just comes down to putting your head down and doing the work every day. But it is a
surprise. Fantastic book. Do the work.
It's an amazing book.
Awesome. Yeah, I've heard that one mentioned a few times. So definitely added it to my list. So what has been one of your favorite quotes that you've embodied and lived by?
So I have tattooed on my arm a Roman phrase. It's Latin, but Romans, the memento mori. So what that means is back during the Roman Empire, when they were just the biggest, greatest, scariest army there was on the earth, they would go out and they would just slaughter all of their enemies. They'd come back to their empires. They'd have these big parades about how great they were. There was one emperor, Marcus Aurelius, who would tell everybody, memento mori. And what that means is remember death. And the reason he would continually say that is today we're triumphant. Today we're doing great. Today everything's great. But tomorrow it might be us. It might be us on the other end of this battle, whatever that battle happens to be. So I have that tattooed on my arm in a place where pretty much every day I remember, because it's motivating when you're down. It's motivating to say, like, this could be the last time I get to do this thing. And it's also motivating in a way when you're up, because it also could be the last time you're up. So I keep that close.
I think it's a great reminder, especially as a business owner, there's ups and downs. Like, it's never a straight line. It's never a gradual growth. Like, it's, yeah, I think that's a great, great quote. If there was one thing you could share with fellow business owners that are beginning or simply trying to get to that next level, what would it be?
From the practical standpoint, just do the work. Just put your head down and do the work, just like Stephen Pressfield would say. You can't just sit and think about all this stuff. Thinking about thinking is like one of the biggest time wasters of our entire lives. We think about how we can do these things. If you just know your craft, you know your audience, you know that target, and you figure out all the little checkpoints along the way, whatever that huge thing is at the end, you're gonna get there. Like, it's gonna happen. So just do the work every single day. Just relentlessly.
More is lost with indecision than by making the wrong decision.
Right. And yeah, so decision-making is a big thing of mine, which we've talked through. I say 70% solutions. If I think I'm 70% right, I'm going for it. Just do it. If you've got 70% of the answer, just go. The rest of the 30% will shake out.
And you'll probably realize that what you thought was a one-way decision is actually a two-way. And what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
What's the worst that could happen? Awesome. Well, Dallas, this has been absolutely incredible. Thank you for sharing your time, your story, your talents, and some of those nuggets with us. How can our listeners learn more about you? You already shared with us your website, DallasMcLaughlin.com. Anywhere else that they can get in contact with you?
Yeah, so the website will kind of be the portal into all the social channels. I do have a podcast, which is available everywhere, called Unconsidered. What that podcast is, it's just me, no interviews. I pick a topic and I go down a deep rabbit hole, about 15, 20 minutes, perfect for your morning commute. Things that, again, are impacting our decision-making, things like sunk cost fallacy, things like multitasking. I'm working on one right now about expectation setting and like self-fulfilling prophecies. So it digs into old research, brings it into the modern age, brings it into business ownership. That's where I'm spending some time right now. I like it.
Awesome. Definitely reach out to Dallas, and especially if you're interested in digital marketing or you're looking for someone to help you with your digital marketing. And maybe you just need to figure out what your acquisition cost is and the lifetime value of your customer. Check him out. Go to his website. So this has been an incredible conversation with Dallas. And if this is your first time listening, I'm so glad that you tuned in. People have been asking me what my company does. So since I have you here listening to my show, I'll share that with you now. So my company partners with busy professionals just like Dallas that are looking to experience significant tax savings, have more to invest, and even reinvest their hard-earned capital. And we work with other successful business owners like you by offering them opportunities to invest alongside us in large apartment deals. If you've been frustrated with the stock market, want to grow capital in something you can actually touch and see, and invest in one of the most recession-resilient asset classes, then you can find out how I could serve you by visiting investwithrev.com. It can be overwhelming vetting the right investment and the right operator, but at Rev, we make real estate investing easy. Dallas, again, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story, and it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
And to our listener, remember, you can't have a million-dollar dream with a minimum wage work ethic. So go out there and earn your win for today, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Hope you got value from this episode of The Millionaire Mind, a journey into the mindset of successful business owners. If you want to get results, you've got to take the right steps to get there. Dallin hosts a free weekly educational webinar focused on teaching you how to start investing in apartments so you too can experience the benefits of real estate ownership without doing any of the heavy lifting. There you can gain insights, connect with others like you, and ask Dallin all your burning questions about how you can start owning apartments today. Go to themillionairemind.us. That link is in the show notes.